Hello and welcome to this podcast is written on the back of the Declaration of Independence, in which we attempt to find our conscience, maybe? Who really knows what this film was about?
It's Bangkok Dangerous, baby! Hi, my name's Callum.
And I'm Chelsea.
We watched Bangkok Dangerous. Whew. Fuck me sideways, this film. Fucking... It sucks so hard. So bad.
Holy shit, I've never seen a worse film, and we've watched The Room like 12 times.
Yeah. I mean...
It's not even fun.
It's not fun. It's not bad fun. It's not bad. It's just fucking depressing.
It's so flat. Ugh. So flat. I'm really sorry that we're opening this podcast with this amount of negativity, but buckle in because there's nothing good about this film.
I mean, this is the first... purely bad Nicolas Cage film I think we've watched, personally.
Agree to disagree, but okay.
I think we've watched some, like, fun bad and, like, camp bad and, like...
Depends on your definition of fun.
Cheese bad. I think we've watched sort of variations on the bad genre, but this is just
a bad,
like,
film.
One star bad.
Yeah.
This is, like... This is bad. Let's get the ball rolling, though, as always. Do you have a plot for this film?
No, I don't.
No, because
there is none.
The plot doesn't fucking sort of translate itself properly.
No.
He plays an assassin who gets a job, four jobs in Bangkok, and then gains a conscience because he starts breaking this kind of set of rules that he has, which is don't get attached, and so on. That's the plot, right?
I mean,
oof.
If you can call it a plot.
Yeah. So Nicolas Cage plays Joe in this.
Is that his name?
Yeah, Joe.
When did we find that out? Was that at the beginning?
I found that out during the final action sequence when I decided to look at the IMDb trivia on my phone. That's not really explained. I think it might even be to a point that it's one of those, like, Fight Club-esque, we don't know his name because he's...
Well, he's supposed to be an enigmatic... charismatic sniper
assassin. Yeah, he's an international global assassin who's fucking shit at his job.
Oh man,
because the film first, okay, let's start at the top. I mean I don't know where we're gonna start with this film.
Can we start with him opening the film trying to do Tom Hanks in Sleepless in Seattle?
Well, no, can we start with my first major thing?
What's that?
The film's called Bangkok Dangerous, and the first fucking scene happens in Prague. Instantly, I was like, fuck this film. Because surely you have, like, a prologue in Bangkok, and then you kind of have a flashback to the Prague stuff so that you know it's a Bangkok film.
No, just cut the whole Prague nonsense, because it's all silent.
And it doesn't do anything.
It's meant to establish that he's an assassin. But we don't know why he's killing this random dude.
No.
Because they're having a conversation, but it's all silented out and then covered with some sort of really quiet background music, which we will get to later.
Yeah. Anyway, you wanted
But it's completely silent, so what is the point of that whole prologue? Just cut straight into Bangkok.
Yeah.
With an action sequence for an action film.
Yeah. So the first thing you were going to bring up before I interrupted you there was...
So he opens the film doing that, I'm a lonely man in a restaurant because I can't form attachments. And he's trying to be cool and
suave. Yeah, oh yeah.
But fuck me, is he the most uncharismatic, dull fucking character I have ever seen. Nicolas Cage does not move his face once in this film.
No, I think this is pure Nicolas Cage... trying to pay his tax bills.
Oh, yeah, he's been forced into this.
This is not a project he... Either he did have interest and then fell out of interest or whatever, but there's no passion, there's no energy, there's no... Like, even sometimes when you watch him in, like, a National Treasure or whatever, it's not a good film, and he's not necessarily putting in 110%, but you can see some sparks, some moments, there's some energy, a bit of fizzle, something. This is nothing. This is 5%. This is sleepwalking through the film.
Which brings me onto a segment I like to call Help, I'm trapped in a glass Nicolas Cage of emotion.
It's cancelled. Except... It's cancelled. It doesn't happen today.
Well, he just ruined my joke. But yeah, there's nothing.
There's nothing.
Literally nothing. He's like the flattest flat. just nothing happens. He doesn't raise his voice once. He doesn't do one weird thing. He's just completely checked out. So thank you for listening to Help, I'm Trapped in a Glass Nicolas Cage of Emotion.
I'm going to play you the clip of him doing fuck all now. Yeah, it's just silence. He doesn't do anything. You talked about the sound there. I mean, this is just a point, I think, technically for the whole film. Both the sound and the colour and the sort of cinematography are just muted to nothing. The sound mix is so off and light.
Yeah, there's nothing to get your blood pumping in any of these chase sequences because it is literally low background, as if they just didn't... They weren't really that bothered with what was done by the composer.
Yeah, it's... I mean, we had our TV up relatively loud watching this.
Case in point, right at the beginning, in Prague, in the pointless setup scene, he's got headphones in while he's sniping, and I was like, oh, it's the Baby Driver prequel no one needed. He's going to play some fun music while he's sniping. It's just fucking silent.
Yeah.
There's nothing going on.
There's no reason for them to have that. Because, that would be fun. Like in Baby Driver, you have him listening to Tequila. Or, a fun, juxtaposition-y pop song.
Nope.
Wait.
He's just randomly wearing headphones because Nicolas Cage had to finish the podcast he was listening to or whatever.
They should have called it Daddy Driver. Daddy Driver.
That's terrifying.
The prequel to Baby Driver.
Oh man.
But yeah, the music is muted, the dialogue is muddy, the cinematography is bland. It looks like it was all shot on a VHS camera.
An iPhone 3.
Yeah, a lot of the film's set at night and you just genuinely feel large swathes of the scenes. So you can't see anything.
Yeah.
And Bangkok's a visually interesting city.
Yeah.
There's a lot of interesting architecture. There's a lot of neon. You could go for a kind of a Blade Runner-esque, this is a kind of a future Asia thing, even though it's not necessarily set in the future, but you can kind of bank in on that and have an exciting looking film. No, don't bother.
Nope.
Don't bother. So it's an action film.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about one of the action sequences?
They were shooting water bottles at the end of the film.
Yep.
There was a canoe in the middle somewhere.
Like a gondola.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say that was basically the only action sequence in the whole film. There's kind of ever so tiny little sort of pangs of action. Oh, he's on a motorbike for 30 seconds or shoots a gun for 3 seconds. But there's no chase or fight scene or stunt work, so to speak, except for a sequence in the middle. Where they are after one of his hits in a traditional Thai kind of gondola style canoe boat, right? It's the slowest, blandest. I mean, I wrote it's a straight line chase.
It is a straight line.
I don't think at any point do these two gondolas.
No, it's
turn
a straight river.
Or weave. Or do anything. They just go in a straight line, and Nicolas Cage has a gun, and then at one point he jumps off the boat and gets onto a bike
because the bad guy in quotes, because who's the bad guy here?
The hit
shoots out their engine, so he has to jump off the boat and steal someone's motorbike.
Yeah, he steals someone's motorbike
to
and
go
then
along the canal,
along the straight canal.
Yeah.
At one point, he does a jump, and it gets kind of, emphasised with a little bit of slow-mo.
Mm.
He does, a little jump over a pair of wooden stairs, and the bike maybe leaves the floor by about sort of half a foot. And it's the most pathetic little punctuation of a so-called, inverted commas, stunt I think I've seen.
Yeah, and there are two explosions in that chase scene. They've spent the money on the explosions, and they just happen sort of in the corner of the screen with
emphasis.
Like,
they
it's
don't
like they had
focus.
One take and had to be like, well, as long as it's in the take, we don't mind.
They don't focus on it. The fight, the few little bits of sort of hand-to-hand combat are really unfocused. It's a film. It's Bangkok Dangerous. It's set in Asia. It has a lot of Asian actors in. Without sounding too stereotypical, it should have some martial arts in, surely.
So there was one point, wasn't there, where Nicolas Cage was teaching him a martial art?
Yeah, teaching his kind of the Thai guy. Like apprentice kind of Thai guy who's, I believe, called Kong or Kong. I'm not sure whether there's a G at the end of it or not. But it's just weak. It's weak. The whole film's weak. This is such a depressing podcast.
This episode isn't even going to be funny because I'm genuinely so angry and upset with this film. I can't believe you made me watch this. You owe me so hard.
Don't worry, we'll watch something good next time, I'm sure.
Will we?
We will.
Will we?
Yeah. So I guess we're going to know what post-lockdown filming is going to look like now.
Yeah.
Because obviously post-lockdown, we're not going to be allowing hair and makeup near our actor at
because
all.
Because you can't get a 2 meter long foundation brush.
You need to maintain social distancing. So there's no chance that the actor's going to put a hairbrush through their own fucking fake wig.
Wait, was that not his real hair?
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised.
I assumed it was his real hair because it's real gross.
It's Cage's hair is gross in this film.
It's unwashed. It's unbrushed. It's like if Professor Snape became a drug dealer.
Yeah.
It's got that look to it.
Kind of, yeah. And to go along...
He spends half the film in grey sweatpants?
Yeah.
What kind of assassin is this?
It's because it was the most comfortable thing for Nicolas Cage to be in.
And
he refused to leave
so
his trailer if he had to put on the pair of jeans that they wanted. You know, there's the scene in the boat where he has a hat on. And I'm like, oh, a costume choice.
Yeah.
And then that's it. Yeah. I think that scene in the boat at the beginning, the scene in the boat in the middle, the chase I just talked about, I think that was the first thing to be shot.
Do you?
Because it's the most engaging the film gets in terms of...
Did you find
it
engaging?
No. But it's the most directed sequence. Nothing else is directed in the film. The camera's kind of just there.
Apart from the one bit where there's like 12 jump cuts in a row for no reason.
Oh, what?
I can't even remember the
bullet time sequence where the bullet goes slow-mo through the air.
Right near the beginning where he's trying... I think it's in the Prague bit where he's lining up to snipe some dude who's been arrested through the window.
Oh, and you keep getting the shots of the watch
about.
And stuff.
Yeah, yeah, there's like 12 jump cuts in a row. I can't even remember, and this was like an hour and a half ago we started that film.
Yeah, I mean,
we've literally just finished the film.
Yeah, we've just come. That's why we sound so fucking defeated.
Yeah, maybe we should have left a gap this time.
We should have left a gap.
Oh,
watched an episode of Space or something.
Save me.
So I believe you've got some Amazon movie reviews for this one.
I have.
Because surely...
Bear with me while I remember where I put my phone.
This might give us something interesting to talk about when it comes to regard to 2008's Bangkok Dangerous.
Now, I am shook. I am shook by these Amazon reviews.
Yeah.
They are bonkers. Do you know, Amazon rating, 4.3 out of 5 stars.
Out of 5?
Out of 5.
Not out of 10.
No. 4.3 out of 5, 69% of 5-star reviews, and only 8% of 1-star. I am baffled by this.
Bearing in mind, it's not just we think this film is bad. This film is widely regarded as one of the worst Nicolas Cage projects.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it's got on Rotten Tomatoes.
Like, Rotten Tomatoes, I think it's about... It's in the kind of 0 to 10% range. It's not fared well at all.
Richie Lee, who has other things going on, clearly, says, awesome. I personally love Nick Cage and I love Thailand, especially Bangkok, .. It's true what they say, .. It's called Bangkok for a reason.
Oh no.
I would love to go into more detail, but Amazon would probably give me a row. And that's his review of the film. Fuck you, Richie Lee.
Richie Lee.
Fuck you so hard.
Disgusting. Bitch. Disgusting.
Bitch disgusting, in the words of Cardi B. 1-star review.
Okay, so someone who's on our level.
Someone who agrees with us.
Yeah.
Sebastian Palmer.
Mm-hmm.
morally offensive garbage. I wish Amazon had a no star option. Even negative stars.
Yeah, yeah.
Cage continues to prove he has no ability to discern good from evil, portraying characters who are, I guess, supposed to be the heroes of the films they appear in, but who are, in fact, morally bankrupt products of infantile fantasy.
Wow.
I saw this on TV. Or rather, it was on TV whilst I was doing something else. Terrible film, terrible music, terrible studio ideas. Pseudo ideas, not studio ideas.
Yeah.
This isn't...
I was like, what did the studio do?
Studio. Terrible pseudo ideas. Just terrible. I agree.
I would agree with the majority of that, yeah.
Too clever by half. That's the number two. Too clever by half.
Okay.
One word.
I'm not...
Says, don't make me laugh. This is a long review.
Okay, go for it.
Mr. Cage is going seriously loopy. It's very respectful, Mr. Cage. The National Treasure stuff was daft, but kind of enjoyable because they know it's daft and we know it's daft and nobody should take it seriously.
I agree.
This, on the other hand, is utter rubbish. I know it's a stylistic exercise. Is it?
Is it? Where's the fucking style, mate?
When did that happen? I missed that. I know it's part of a tradition of SE Asian films, Southeast Asian films.
Maybe there are some elements to that. I'll allow that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But oh dear, it's woeful. It's the story of a lonely hitman who only wants to connect with the rest of humanity. Is it? Does he?
No, he wants to connect with two people, and that's it.
Despite his ability to slaughter anyone for money, he finally finds solace in the doe-like eyes of... I'm not going to say this phrase because it's...
offensive.
It's offensive. The sales assistant from the local chemist.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Who is deaf.
Yeah.
Not the phrase they have used.
Oh, gosh.
No, I want something to take away the pain. I think that's a quote. It's in quote marks. I don't remember that being in the film.
No.
And the cocky street ruffian with a heart of gold. When a hit on a good guy politician becomes one moral step too far, he decides to seek retribution on the bad guys who set it all up.
Okay.
Brackets. This is all one sentence. It's gone on for a very long time. Having already whacked three of their previous targets.
Yeah.
If that doesn't put you off, then the lingering pseudo what is life all about guff and the year-long shots of the deep disturbed but finally realising the truth about life eyes of Mr. Cage should finally make you scream for mercy. And yet, they dub it the second worst film of the year. And I really want to know what the first... what was the first worst film of the year?
Can you click on their sort of account
no.
to see what other films they reviewed in that year? Because I really want to know what's worse than this.
Desperately. What year was this? 2008?
I believe 2008.
Too clever by half.
Also, I very much...
129 reviews. 129 reviews! I can't look through those.
No, screw that. So it's a failed endeavour to try and find out what the first worst movie of that year was, but...
This person's written like 700 reviews and I'm not doing that.
I don't agree with the too clever by half nonsense. He's kind of reviewing it as if it's like a sensitive, kind of slow burn crime melodrama.
Which is really not.
It's really not. It's just a bad zero budget nonsense thing.
Man, fuck this film.
I mean, so he brings up an interesting point about Southeast Asian filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the origins of this film, so there is an element of that that should come into play when sort of assessing this film. I don't think any of it's going to redeem the film at all. But one thing that is interesting about that film, this film, is Bangkok Dangerous is a remake
of, is it?
Yes, of a Thai language crime film.
Okay.
By the Pang brothers.
Who are the directors of this film?
Who are the directors of this film?
Okay.
So they directed the original Bangkok Dangerous in the year 2000, made about four or five other films after that, and then made the English language remake of their very own film 8 years later.
Right.
Supposedly, the original Bangkok Dangerous isn't half bad. So how the heck...
What happened in those 8 years?
What got lost in translation? I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it does feel almost like the film has been completely hacked out after it was made, because there are whole swathes of story that just disappear.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of wrote that down. I get the feeling that maybe, A, I don't know about what their... because it's the only English language film they've made.
Right.
I don't know about what their language barrier is like, and whether they had to sort of direct through translators and mm-hmm. things like that. Whether that... obviously, it's going to make a job harder. But also, I don't know whether they made the film as basically they normally would as a Southeast Asian film, and then the American distributors at Lionsgate or whatever studio made this film, I can't remember when.
Shame on them, whoever they are.
This is 2.5 hours and half of it's in Thai. Mm. I can't sell this. Chop, 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 chop. And now what we've got left is this. Because that would explain these really weird gaps in between sort of every third or fourth scene where they edit the film but like leave like a 3 or 4 second black, empty, quiet screen between scenes. Almost like that's where the TV commercial sits in. Because there's I can't work out what was happening there.
There's one scene towards the end where you see him... this is what Too Clever by Half was talking about, where he can't decide whether to shoot this politician who is supposedly well-beloved.
Mm.
And he's sort of using his scope to scan the crowd and see how happy they are, which
not is what an assassin
morally
would
reprehensible.
Do.
Yeah. Very dangerous.
Yeah.
And trying to decide and looking at all these happy people going, oh, they really love him. I assume, because you can't tell by Nicolas Cage's face because he is not doing anything.
Yeah.
And then it cuts to black. And then when it comes on, he's doing the same thing again, almost like it's recapping.
Yeah, like an episode of Mythbusters where they tell you 7 times what just happened in the last part of the show. It like...
it's a to be continued.
Yeah, like... it's almost like it was made in 2008 with the intention of it being on failed streaming platform Quibi, where they were going to break the film down into 10-minute segments.
Shall we talk romance?
Yes, let's talk romance.
Because there is none.
So, Nicolas Cage kills his first hit on a motorbike in like a traffic sort of jam situation.
Mm-hmm.
He rides off and a young boy scrapes his arm on the motorbike with some, like he's trying to dodge out of the way, this young boy. So later on in the evening, he goes to a pharmacy to get some Savlon. Bearing in mind, he's an international assassin.
Doesn't have a basic first aid kit.
Who has like a very nice kind of quite posh modernist sort of mansion house somewhere in Bangkok City, or that at least he's rented.
Oh, he will have rented it.
That contains 3 motorbikes and multiple guns and a picture of an elephant. And he doesn't have any bloody Savlon in the house or any antiseptic cream.
Is basic. Any first aid kit is going to have some wipes just to make sure you don't get infected at the best.
Right?
Like, why do you... Why wouldn't you have that with you?
So he goes to the...
It's a dangerous job. Like, it's a dangerous job.
Yeah. You'd at least have some aspirin and a bit of gauze, wouldn't you?
I spent 3 years telling people where to sit in a theatre. And we still had first aid kits.
Yeah.
I'm not taking people out and risking my life on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, he has nothing.
But we know where the Savlon is.
Yeah.
Jesus.
He has beers in the fridge, but he doesn't have any Savlon.
He's such a fuckboy.
So he goes to the pharmacy, and there are 2 Thai ladies working there.
Mm-hmm.
And he asks one of them for some Savlon. Bearing in mind, he's an international assassin and he cannot speak Thai. So who hired him to do 4 jobs in Thailand? Hire an assassin who can speak the language, surely, mm-hmm. right? That's a big part of the job. I've seen the Bourne films. That's a big part of the job. You speak the language.
Ah, yes, that famous documentary, The Bourne Identity.
Yeah. He goes to the pharmacy to get this cream, and he gets talking, and I say talking, miming to a woman who works there who is deaf and mute to try and get some cream. And then they hit it off, which is odd because neither of them can talk to each other. And he has the chemistry of a plank of wood.
Mm-hmm.
So how they hit it off isn't... You can't see anything. The only thing that lets you know that they are now in love is because you know the conventions of watching a bad film. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing there that you, like, they don't even play, like, why do birds suddenly appear in the background on the radio? Like, there's nothing. The only thing that makes you go, oh, well, they're in love is because you know the conventions of bad movies.
Well, that and the fact that there are two women in this film.
No, oh, yeah.
That's a lie. There are four women in this
four
film.
Four women. Two of whom are...
One is... One also works in the pharmacy and is essentially a glorified translator.
Yeah.
For the deaf woman, because she can speak sign language. One is the deaf woman's mother.
Yeah.
Because we're all only mothers or daughters. The other two are the deaf girl and a girl who works in a dance club. It's implied she's a stripper.
But it's not. She's kind of an exotic dancer.
Exotic dancer.
Yeah.
And those two characters are only there to be the love interests of both of the male characters.
Yeah.
There are like three or four lines of female dialogue. And the women just sort of exist to perpetuate this trope that violence against women is an acceptable method of getting to a male hero.
Yeah, definitely.
Just, and it romanticizes the fact that Nicolas Cage starts stalking this girl.
Yeah,
after
yeah.
she, for a very valid reason, doesn't want to see him again.
Totally.
Just fuck this film, man.
Yeah. Oh, I mean the exotic dancer is purely there as like a MacGuffin, almost as like a, you know, save the girl, save the world kind of thing. Like, she does nothing. She's given nothing to do.
Yeah.
Except be a carrier of an object from person to person. That's all she does.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and there's no reason for... Bad films like this often have the sort of trope of a strong, powerful sort of fighter assassin women
mm-hmm.
who are maybe good at hand-to-hand combat or something. And it's not a very progressive stereotype, and it's not a very powerful character to have in a film, but it's something.
I mean, especially if she's not fucking allowed to talk.
It's something. Every single woman in this film is like low-ranking or small or diminutive or, like you said, like literally doesn't have a voice. Like, she is nothing more than like two googly eyes stuck on an oven mitt, because she doesn't have anything to do. It's
I mean, the whole thing about Nicolas Cage trying to find love, it's not about the woman. It's not about learning to connect with someone who you can't communicate with yet. It's just for them to go, oh, maybe he's not such a bad guy because he's capable of maybe loving someone.
Yeah.
It's all just character development for him. Anyway, thank you for listening to Feminist Criticism of Bangkok Dangerous.
Totally. It's...
God, it's such a shitty film.
It's depressing.
Don't watch it, Jesus.
I mean, I would say, oh, go watch it on streaming. It's not on any of the streaming platforms. Don't.
For a good reason. Don't search it out. It. Don't spend money on it.
Let me see. Have I got anything else? I'm like a prickly pear. There's one moment where Nicolas Cage auditions to be the shark in the new Jaws film.
Now that's a remake I do want to see.
He kills one of his hits in a swimming pool. It's a fat guy who's like swimming in the swimming pool, and then you see like a little black blob floating under the surface of the water and coming towards the fat guy, and then grabbing him and then pulling him down and drowning him. And it's just very, it's just very funny. It's just funny. It's not particularly noteworthy, but in a film like this, you take any little morsel you can get.
It's the only funny bit of the film.
And we had a lot of joy in thinking, oh, maybe Nicolas Cage could be the shark in the next Jaws film.
I love it. See his little nose sticking out over the water.
Yeah.
Da-na.
Oh, is he swimming upwards like
yeah,
that?
He's swimming on his back.
I was thinking we would have to have long-haired Nicolas Cage and we would gel his hair up into the spike.
Oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Although I never want to see Nicolas Cage with long hair again. I feel like there's probably a whole period because every man, especially teenage boys, had that kind of shoulder length.
Mid to late 2000s.
Yeah, yeah. Goblet of Fire nonsense haircut.
Yep. Goblet of Fire haircut. Yeah, I hate to break it to you. I think there's definitely at least a handful more of long-haired Nick Cage.
I don't know if I can take it. It's like, I wasn't ugly. Joking. It really put it's me in mind ugly. of Professor Snape. Because, like, at least Alan Rickman is kind of quite attractive.
Oh, no.
Maybe not in costume, but, like, he has an attractive face.
Oh, okay. So like, young Rickman. More age.
No, even Rickman at that age. Don't trap me into this. Even Rickman at that age, he is much more attractive than you would imagine Snape to be. Yeah, like at least Alan Rickman can kind of pull that off. We do not condone putting people down for their looks, but this film is an extraordinary exception.
It's just, like, even beyond Nicholas, it's just an ugly film.
Mm.
The camera doesn't stop moving. The cinematography is awful.
Ugh.
It's dark, but not in a fun way.
There were probably three or four scenes where we both went, who is that?
What
are they doing?
Yeah. What's this? Like,
where are we now?
I mean, there was one shot in particular of a man, I believe, opening a door handle. And the problem was the screen was so black that it wasn't like, oh, you could see the you could see the handle and the door and the hand going. Couldn't even see that. All you could see was one strip of light reflecting on the door handle, and that was it. Just one little bar of light. The whole screen was black and one little like line of white, and that was it.
They could have made this like a really interesting, like you said earlier, kind of Blade Runner, but like film noir type.
Yeah.
A modern noir Bangkok
yeah.
assassin adventure.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe that's what they were going for, but they did not achieve it.
There's a high possibility that was the intention, but oof.
We don't care about intention, we only care about the product.
Well, talking about the product, Nicolas Cage's watch.
Yes.
Interesting, Nicolas Cage throughout the film, there's a lot of tension that is supposedly ramped up by seeing this watch. He uses a watch to time all of his hits.
Even though you're never made aware of what time he's waiting for, so, how close he's getting.
So the tension doesn't work because it's a ticking time bomb to we're not sure.
Mm-hmm.
The watch is... Nicolas Cage was an ambassador for the brand of the watch, so it's basically product placement. and it's just cheap and crass, and it just made me go, ugh.
Buy my watch, pay my bills.
I mean, I'd rather just have, like, you know, the film had lots of pachinko machines in or, like, other weird things. Nicolas Cage has been a brand ambassador for.
Has he been a brand ambassador for pachinko?
Oh, yeah. Look up some of the pachinko ads he's been in. They're bonkers.
Oh, we'll do a bonus episode on pachinko ads.
Oh, Nicolas Cage adverts. I like that.
Yeah.
We'll do that episode one day.
Right near the beginning, he's hired Kong?
Kong.
He's hired a Thai chap who is sort of... He's a grifter. He's stealing tourist
trying
to make money. He flips character very quickly, but I don't really want to talk about that. He goes from being like, fuck your mother, Nicolas Cage, to, oh, okay, boss, I'll do anything for you. Even though Nicolas Cage is not scary enough.
Yeah, not only fuck your mother, but at one point he calls him duck fucker.
But his first task as Nicolas Cage's second in command,
student, yeah,
he said right hand arm, because we've been watching that video so
just type in Mr. Sterling's right hand arm man into YouTube and you'll know why we're laughing.
his first task as Nicolas Cage's second in command is to go and pick up a package mm-hmm. from the exotic dancer.
Yeah.
Whose name, of course, we never learn, because why do women need names?
Fon?
I don't know. Did she have a name?
Maybe. I'm not sure if that was her name or the pharmacy lady's name.
Okay, that is my bad if she had a name, but...
I mean, they're not really... I mean, I think the reason I've glimmered the name Fon is from, again, from the IMDb page.
Okay. So he must pick up a package and he must bring it straight back to Nicolas Cage. He cannot even stop for a piss.
Yeah.
That is very explicitly said, like, 3 times.
Yeah.
So this dude runs a red light in order to get back to Nicolas Cage. But Nicolas Cage is behind him in a car. Nicolas Cage hasn't been waiting for this package to arrive. He's fucking gone out for McDonald's or something and is driving behind him.
Yeah.
What was that all about?
Not a clue.
None of this is explained. The film is full of things like this where it's just like, that makes no sense. Did you cut a scene? Was he following him to check that he was doing his job?
That's what I was kind of glimmering from it, but no one tells you that.
No one tells you that.
No, nothing.
And it's not that we just haven't worked hard enough to work it out. It's just that there are no clues. If there were any clues, it was cut. The context of this film is just completely removed.
All of the clues were written in black paint on black paper and then put in the background of the scenes in the shadow so you can fucking see them. And I'm done.
Yeah, I'm done too.
I'm done. This is a bad film. And it's not bad in a fun way. Just don't give it your time.
No, just don't.
Don't. And there will be points when we come across films that I'm sure I will kind of find like cringy enjoyable, but are still bad, and you will find annoying and bad.
Yeah.
And we can at least kind of meet halfway and kind of give each other a kind of like a timid recommendation. But both of us can unequivocally say, do not watch this film. It is bad.
Although I will say, if I was listening to this, that would just make me want to go and watch the film.
But it's boring bad.
It's really boring. It's an hour and a half and it felt longer than Face Off, which is like 2.5 hours.
Yeah. Oh, like, gosh, it felt long.
Face Off was way too long, but this film is way too long and it's only an hour and a half.
Face Off has a few sparks and moments. Even if you don't enjoy the film, you might go, oh, well, that's a fun stunt, or why is he doing that performance choice? Or that's an odd bit of dialogue, so that you can at least glimmer some enjoyment out of it ever so often. But this, nothing. Nothing. Nothing for a Cage fan, nothing for a Cage hater.
Boo. 2 thumbs down. Thanks for listening.
So what are we doing? Wait, we can't wrap up just yet. It's your choice.
Yeah, no, I'm done. I'm never doing this again.
No, tough. What's your choice for next time? Have you had a thought about this, or should we...
I had a little thought.
Okay.
I went back and forth on this a few times because I'm quite keen to do... not Knight Rider. What's the one where he has a motorbike?
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider. And he's got flames on his head or some shit.
Yeah.
I'm interested in that.
Should we do Ghost Rider?
We're not doing Ghost Rider.
Oh, no.
We're going to do Adaptation.
I haven't seen it in a very long time, but another critically acclaimed Cage film and a Cage performance that's very good. But I warn you, there is double the Cage in this film.
What do you mean double the Cage?
I'm going to leave you on a bombshell here.
All I know is that on the cover is his head in a plant pot or some shit.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh my god. Is it a Seymour thing?
No. Let's sign out and then I'll tell you when we both signed out. So you've been listening to this podcast. It's written on the back of the Declaration of Independence. My name's Callum.
My name is Chelsea.
Don't watch Bangkok Dangerous. Nicolas Cage is twice in this film. He plays twins.
What?
You have been listening to This Podcast is Written on the Back of the Declaration of Independence. If you've enjoyed the show, then maybe you could give us a subscription or a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you download your podcasts from.
You can also find us on all the usual social media channels as Nick Cage Pod. That's NICCAGEPOD. If you really enjoyed it and would like to give us the equivalent of a cup of coffee over the internet, you can donate a small amount to our coffee page at ko-fi.com/nickcagepod, again, /NICCAGEPOD. Thank you very much for listening.
Bye!
Bye!